Well, good afternoon. How y'all doing? Everyone's slightly post-lunch comed. Well, it's good. It's fun to come and talk about at a research session about a method. And so I'm not presenting a study. I'm here to talk methods. So how many of you are methodologists? Are you? You would claim to be methodologists. Good. Well, then we're going to get along famously. Okay. I've got like three sort of methods in my trick bag, and I was really challenged on a project to work with my colleagues in the School of Visual Arts at Indiana University, the School of Design, to think about some new ways of knowing, as Barbara Kaper would say, and sort of change the way we frame the method of discovery. And so that's really what I'm going to talk about today. The vector for the discussion is healthcare emergency management. I know many of you spend a lot of time thinking about this. This is how, that was a joke, the research section joke, that's what constitutes funny here. Healthcare systems are exceedingly complex organizations that are actually really poor at responding to crisis. Unfortunately, in the United States, we've set them up to be the places where we go when we're in trouble. And of course, for those of you that work in hospitals, like I do on occasion, you know that these are places you probably don't want to be on a good day, let alone when something's going bad. Traditionally, we're going to talk today about a way of thinking and sort of switching that narrative a bit. Me and my colleagues have nothing to disclose. The MESH Coalition is a coalition of healthcare organizations in central Indiana that works on emergency management related issues. And they approached us, first they did a huge needs assessment of a couple of their large academic health centers in the region. Then they came to Indiana University, to the School of Medicine where I'm at, and to to my colleagues at the School of Art. And what they said was, look, everybody meets all the standards, and everyone's accredited, and everyone meets all the regulatory standards for emergency management. And for those of you who have worked in hospitals, I said this earlier, that usually means they have a closet full of vests, and they have stair chairs, and everyone has a flashlight. It's very reductionist. It's not unimportant, but there's no scientific relationship between doing all those things and actually having a resilient healthcare system. There's none at all. They're just things we do. So what MESH said was, we really want to flip the script a little bit, and we want you to help our hospitals redesign completely what emergency management should look like. So instead of taking joint commission requirements and simply doing them and saying we now have this thing, what would it be? And so I didn't really know how to do this because this isn't what I do. And so I happened to have a colleague who said, oh, no, I have the perfect model for you. We'll use this IDEO model, and it's hot right now, and everyone likes Post-it notes, and we'll do these sessions, and it'll be fun. And I thought, I'm out. But I listened, and so they said, we want to try this human-centered design approach. And really, this is shockingly simple. In theory, not in execution, which is the idea that when you work with users of a product, you should consult the users in the design of the product. For those of you who use a computer, how many of you are PC users? How many are Mac users? Yeah, so we know, right? We understand the difference between human-centered design and corporate-centered design, which is the difference, of course, between the Mac and PC experience. And that is, of course, the magic of some of the products that we hold dear to our hearts. And so the question was, could we use a human-centered design method to actually implement a public health initiative, in this case, in emergency management? So we tried. We weren't the first to ever use this approach. Here it is. I know people like charts and things that are conceptual models, and so here's ours. Basically, it begins with this idea of research, which leads to analysis, and that is collecting an understanding from the viewpoint of the user, what it is that they care about, and then using the users themselves to frame issues and actually ideate or come up with solutions. And it's a very divergent process, so for those of you who are very linear, this would really cause you a lot of angst. And then getting into the actual iteration and implementation. And so a lot of this is based on some engineering principles of rapid prototyping, the idea of failing forward fast. You may have heard phrases like this. If you haven't, it's the idea that the sooner you make an error, the better in a design strategy. Does anyone have a theory about why that would be? Because we like error. What's that in the back? I saw your mouth move. Yeah, right, absolutely. So you can switch it. Again, these are things that we don't teach at all in research, right? We teach the opposite, which is move slowly, be careful. And then we say it takes a long time to get knowledge from one point to the other. So our question was, how might we conceptualize emergency management for healthcare organizations? It was kind of a bold and major question. And everyone initially said, we don't need to. It's already been conceptualized for us. And here it is, and it's in a binder, this thick, literally. You've maybe seen binders like this. It had policies and procedures, and I do this for a living. I'm an expert in crisis response, and I never read those things. And so I thought, well, we're off to a smashing start. This is the predominant and prevailing model. This is the status quo in emergency management. Someone found a clip art graphic at Microsoft Office, probably in 2004, of a circle. And they wrote words next to it, which is how a lot of these conceptual models are built, by the way. And they started at this idea that you prepare, and then you respond, and then you recover. And then maybe you can do some mitigation so that, you know, you don't have to do this again. And I'm not knocking this. I mean, I'm being a little flip on purpose. But the truth is that this was just some perceived truth that someone wrote down, and it sounded good at a conference like this. And next thing you know, it's in every textbook in America, and in fact, around the world. Is this a good model? Sure, it's a great model. Does it mean anything? I don't know. Does it mean anything to you? That's the question, right? Like, there's nothing wrong with this, but this is not science. This is just some things there. And that isn't because it's not empirically validated, because you can't empirically validate an idea like this. That's not the point of ideas. So here we go. And so we convened a group, and this was really gnarly. We got about 40 clinicians. These are people who didn't know anything about emergency management, which was the point. We put them in a room over several days, and we said, tell us how emergency management works, you know, where you work. Because, you know, they're the ones who actually do the actual managing of the emergency. And what they came up with was something far different. And, of course, we put icons on it so that it would look pretty. And this is what I want to talk about first. And this is this idea that the entire process of managing a crisis begins with intelligence, which is a word that they chose, which I found interesting. This idea of knowing things. And of course, if you work in a hospital, it's very difficult to know even what the weather is outside, you know, let alone what's going on in the world. So is a tornado coming? Is there going to be a flood? You know, you really do get just like being a Vegas casino. And the other side of this was the idea that hospitals actually know a lot about their operations. They measure a ton, especially around things that they get paid for. Now, things they don't get paid for, they don't measure, right? And that's normal and rational behavior. What they don't have, they're swimming in data. They don't really have any analysis of the data, right? Which we all, a lot of us face this. This isn't just unique to healthcare. And they didn't have, and they talked about this idea of intelligence triggering an action, which seems so practical. I can guarantee you no one would have ever thought of this on our side of the house. That is, we would have told you all this data, flood levels, 100-year flood levels, where you sit in a city, and they would have said, that's nice, but how do I know when to evacuate my hospital? How do you know? That's a great question. There's someone's entire research career could be based on that, because so far no one's figured it out, because there's a huge risk-benefit calculation in moving patients out of a hospital. How do you know when it's bad enough? Well, I don't know. Well, they don't know either, and what they kept saying was, your little circle doesn't help me answer that. And then it came to this concept of decision-making, which is you get this intelligence and you have some triggers, but what they really saw was important was this idea of decision-making. And I'll just sum it up for you simply by saying that the sort of gist of this was that many of the participants pointed out that what makes you a successful leader in a hospital system is not your ability to make decisions unilaterally in a crisis. It's in fact quite the opposite. People who get to those positions are people who typically have not made decisions unilaterally, right? They're consensus builders or whatever. And again, these aren't positive or negatives. They're just sort of the truisms of working in large organizations. In a disaster, we tell them to put on a red vest and start commanding people as though they were all sort of Patton, and they can't do it. They're just not good at it. And we say, I wonder why these hospitals continue to go down in crises. So then the question was sort of raised by the participants, maybe there's a new way of thinking about decision making, and that is training for things like confidence and execution bias among leaders, which could be used every day for lots of other things. Consider that the things we lament around nursing advocacy have historically been, why don't nurses think critically, which is really shorthand for what happened to sort of the loud, boisterous nurses who used to save lives in sort of rail against medical hegemony. And a lot of that is reflected, too, in the administration of hospitals, which is it's all sort of become a little milquetoast. And it doesn't work in a crisis. Really interesting stuff that has nothing to do with the circle we had been used. And then finally, there was a response element, which I'm going to skip. And instead of recovery, they use different words. It's essentially the same idea, but this idea of rebounding, which is sort of a resilience sort of language, you know, this sort of bouncing back, and you know, UNICEF calls it bouncing back better, which I love. But this idea that you sort of start on a Pareto chart and you're doing sort of this all over the place, and you're going to end somewhere. The question is, can we nudge it up a little bit, or just do we adapt to the new normal? Well, this was great as far as models go, and everyone patted themselves on the back. And, of course, I'm a pragmatist, and I said, I don't know, let's see if this can work. We should do it in a hospital. They said, no one will let you do this. So I found a sucker, a huge academic health center with a level one trauma center, and I said, let us redo your entire emergency management program. And the only rule is you're not allowed to consider the Joint Commission. If I can guarantee you'll pass an inspection, you just have to let us do whatever you want. And that means we're going to get rid of all your procedures and policies. And they did it. They bought into it. Here's how we did it. We first convened all the CEO, which is a big deal for a place like this. This is a person who's not used to going to any meetings, let alone the kind where there are crayons. And the CEO, the CFO, the CNO, all the C's gathered. And we made them do things like introduce themselves on paper by drawing a crayon picture of themselves. Even I got a little itchy at some of this. You know, the artists are like, trust us, this really works. And it did. And we also asked them to visualize their worst fear during an emergency. And it was totally like therapy. What came out of this was this idea that they weren't confident in their ability to work their jobs in crisis, which was really stunning. These are people who make billion-dollar merger deals every day. And, you know, they really were being kept up at night by the thought of there being a snow emergency. And, of course, those of us who do this work are like, wow. Okay, that's good, because we know how to do that. Yeah, I'm going to skip this. I didn't really need it. The big thing was the confidence. And the idea that this confidence was getting in the way of their executive decision-making. It was a fascinating discovery. Because now the public health intervention at the hospital level to ensure that these hospitals stay open is to increase the confidence of CEOs in their ability to be okay during crisis, which is, again, not in our chart. It was not in our playbook at all. We didn't even know that was something we should be doing. We just assumed they knew how to do that. We then tried to understand how intelligence was gathered and disseminated inside this academic health center. And this was like one of the most confusing things I've ever done. It took 2 or 3 days. We used so many post-it notes that I think we ran out. And of course, what it told us was that the information flow was crazy. It was so complex. And they had built new ways of talking to each other about really critical information. One of the big questions was evacuation data. They wanted to start asking nurses to sort of do some sort of, how many of you are nurses? Yeah, so this is pretty classic. You'll appreciate this. Like, collect one more piece of data on night shift so we can figure out who we would have to evacuate soon enough. And one of our staff members said, you know, why don't we just take the Medicare or Medicaid data you use to determine length of stay, because I know you know where every single patient is, right? Have they been here 2 days or 3 days, because soon you're going to stop getting paid for them, and we'll just figure out then who's ready for discharge. And there was this just collective, like, shock. And I was shocked, too, because it was an elegant solution, right? I didn't think of it, but it was data they already had. It was just not being used for emergency management purposes. And again, we never would have done that. We would have brought in emergency management people who would have solved a problem. Of course, the problem had already been solved by the end user, which is the real lesson here in using human-centered design. If you've ever been at a park where there's a lovely path that goes through the park, like an asphalt path, but then there's some sort of wear on the grass, right? That's a clue, right? Which is that's where people walk, right? Yeah, it's so true, but we do this all the time, right? And it's something we have to be conscious about. We finally asked, we brought a huge group together to talk about decision-making, and this was really where the rubber hit the road. And what out of this came this idea that we were wrong even in our iterative development process, which is the boots on the ground people said, just let us handle everything. The way to solve the confidence dilemma in executives, and that includes nurse managers, lest you think we're just talking about the CEOs, is to actually just get rid of management in a crisis. And what a lovely and wonderful idea. The military, of course, has used this idea for forever, and it seems counterintuitive, but the military is actually run by soldiers who, you know, we put on the ground with very little instruction and supervision, who are asked to do their job. And of course, that's what the nurses and doctors wanted as well. So what does that mean? So we finished this process, and I'm just showing you some flow sheets. I just wanted to show you in closing, and by the way, the verdict is out, and we have a measurement problem, right? So I'm kind of cheating a bit by talking to you about the method without actually telling you how to validate it. That's because that's not what I do. We have some people who are interested in that, but it's sort of tricky because we have to wait for a crisis to come along, which is really hard in disaster research. We can generate some crises in tests, but they're really bad. The value of the evidence is really poor under simulated and exercise conditions. But what used to be a thing like this for Joint Commission, I just thought I'd show you. This is the entirety of the emergency operations program at this hospital. There are pictures that are on walls that tell you what to do just in time. Shock and awe, like this is exactly what we would do if I had asked you and you didn't know any better, right? So for example, how many of you have read the instruction manual on your refrigerator? None of us would ever read that, ever in a million years, right? But if you open your refrigerator, sometimes there's a just-in-time sticker that's like, if the light's broken, you know, do this or whatever. And that's exactly what the nurses and doctors wanted, and we tell them what to do. And you'll see a lot of little fine print for the regulators, so they can see. We're using your buzzwords. We know what you want to see, right? Here it is. So one, and I'll let you see these if you'd like later. I will say this. There is one element of validation, which was we had a big Joint Commission survey that happened 3 weeks after we did this, and it was unannounced. And, of course, they asked me to come in and then represent this whole program to them because they were scared out of their mind, and they had wheeled in this cart full of their old binders, kind of just in sort of parked, just in case it was needed, like just ready to whip it out at any moment. And the accreditor, like many, spent most of the time talking about himself. And as we neared the point at which he was to determine the safety of the hospital, he looked and he said, "I've never quite seen such cool things." And I said, "Oh, yes, they're quite cool." And that was the end of our entire accreditation survey. So I think the lesson here, if nothing else, is that sometimes doing the right thing also happens to be incredibly easy to do. But not simple, and a little more complex than I'm letting on, only because now that we've done it for a while, I couldn't imagine doing it any other way. And you might see sort of aspects of your work where working with your customers or subjects, I guess, would be the old word for what we used to call co-participants in research, where there might be some elements that you could use. Thank you.